Welcome to Main Street on member-supported Prairie Public. As Election Day approaches on Tuesday, November 5th, we're here to ensure you're fully informed about the issues that impact your life. Our goal is to help you get to know the candidates, the people seeking your vote, and to understand the voices shaping your perspective on the Measure 4 ballot initiative. If you missed our recent candidate debate or last week's discussion on Measure 4, this week, Main Street will be your chance to catch up. Today, we air North Dakota's gubernatorial debate that featured Republican Kelly Armstrong, Democrat Merrill Pepcorn, and Independent Michael Coachman. Dave Thompson served as the moderator, and the debate originally aired on October 10th.
Funding for Election 2024 coverage is provided in part by AARP, a nonprofit, nonpartisan membership association, 83,000 strong in North Dakota. Find information on how to make your voice heard in the 2024 election at aarp.org/ndvotes. And by the members of Prairie Public.
Hello, I'm Dave Thompson, and welcome to Prairie Public and AARP North Dakota's coverage of Election 2024. Tonight, the debate for office of North Dakota Governor. Our guests are Republican Congressman Kelly Armstrong, Democratic State Senator Merrill Pepcorn, and Independent candidate Michael Coachman. Each candidate will be afforded a one-minute opening and one-minute closing statement. In between, they'll debate and discuss topics and questions that have been chosen by myself, Prairie Public producer Matt Olean, as well as our partners at AARP. Michael Coachman goes first.
Hello, I want to thank everybody. First of all, I want to thank my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, as my Lord and Savior. I want to thank also Prairie Public for making this event happen. As running for governor, I like to let people know what I plan on doing and where I stand. One of the things I want to stand on is the U.S. Constitution. With that, also the North Dakota Constitution. Why is that important? Because without the Constitution, we're no better than any other country. 95% to 98% of the issues that we have in North Dakota can be alleviated by just people following the Constitution of the U.S. and North Dakota. With that, any bill that will come across my desk, I would make sure that these two books are followed, and if it benefits the people of North Dakota. That way you know where our government stands and where you stand as an individual. Thank you.
Next will be Congressman Armstrong.
Thank you, Dave, for hosting this. Thank you to AARP. Thank you to Prairie Public. And thank you to all of the people watching at home who've given me the privilege of serving first in the state Senate, then in the United States Congress, and now this tremendous opportunity and responsibility to run for governor of the greatest state and the greatest country in the history of the world. I have always tried to advocate for North Dakota in the most positive way possible. I'm tireless energy from Beulah to Bismarck to Fargo to Minto to all of the places in between. We have such tremendous opportunities in this state, and we have opportunities to continue to grow, harvest our natural resources in a responsible way. Ag and energy, but most importantly, making sure that every single kid that goes to high school in North Dakota has an opportunity to build a life and career here. It's been my great privilege to serve North Dakota in the U.S. House of Representatives for the last 6 years, but I'm really, really excited about coming home.
Okay, Senator Pepcorn.
Thank you, Dave, and thank you, members of Prairie Public, Dave Thompson, our moderator tonight, and, of course, AARP for hosting tonight's event. I also want to extend our thoughts and prayers to our residents of North Dakota, especially the folks out west, our emergency responders, as they still are battling those wildfires in the western part of the state. I'm Merrill Pepcorn. I am candidate for governor of North Dakota, born in Stanley, raised in Fargo, and served 8 years in the state Senate. We'll discuss several topics tonight where I believe you'll find significant differences between the two other men here on stage with me. If elected, I want to be governor for all of North Dakota. I'm not beholden to special interests. I believe in bipartisanship and putting the good of the state ahead of any allegiance to a political party or philosophy. And we've had enough extremist legislation that interferes with people's personal lives. That sets me apart, in part, from my opponents in several ways. First of all, a woman's right to determine her own health care.
1 minute.
Thank you.
All right. So, first topic, let's start with measure number 4, where voters will be asked to decide whether or not local property taxes should be eliminated. Estimates show the state would have to find about $3.1 billion per biennium to replace those taxes. I have a two-part question for all of you. How will you vote on the measure? And if it passes, where does the state find the money? We start with Kelly Armstrong.
I don't support Measure 4. I understand the frustration. I've been from one end of the state to the other since January, and actually every 2 years running for Congress. People are frustrated. People are angry. People want property tax relief, and they want property tax reform. The problem I see with Measure 4 is that, one, you are absolutely giving opportunities to rat hole money from out-of-state interests in buying land, doing those types of things. The other answer is, I quite frankly, if you get through this, I think Bismarck, Grand Forks, Minot, Fargo, those types of places do okay. But you will start losing absolute local control in the smaller communities. We have really great state senators in the state of North Dakota, but some of them represent 5 or 6 school districts in the North Dakota legislature. And having to go to the legislature every 2 years to deal with those things is going to be really, really problematic, and we need to continue to do it. So I think property taxes has to be front of mind one way or the other, whether the measure passes, whether the measure fails. And if the measure passes, you're going to have to cut programs, cut money, figure out how you deal with those things, or you start raiding principal on some of our funds like the Legacy Fund, which means you will deplete it for future generations. If it doesn't pass, we better be serious about not only doing more relief to property tax, but actually significantly reforming it. The legislature over the last 12 years has actually been good at buy-downs. We buy down on average 40% of the local property tax all across the state. Problem is, we haven't been very good at lowering property taxes. And that's where the frustration lies, and I think there's real opportunities to do there. We've been good at one part of it, but if the state's going to be involved in buying down essentially 50% of the local share of property tax, then we have to have a say in how those local property tax budgets grow.
Senator Pepcorn.
You know, Dave, a lot of the time when we talk about property tax, we are talking about individual residents' property tax, and those are the people who do most of the voting, and those are the people who are most concerned about the rising valuations in their houses and the coinciding raising of mills. You add them all together, and it turns out to be a very significant rise in their property taxes. So I plan on voting no on Measure 4 for several reasons, including the cutback in services to the local political subdivisions. Kelly mentioned a couple of them. I'm going to mention townships. Townships have no taxing authority. They've got hundreds of miles of roads that they're responsible for, costs a lot to gravel and maintain and pave those roads as well. So pay with the maintainer, you know, to keep them level. And they need a lot of work. So I'm concerned about them in particular. When it comes to how are you going to replace it if it does pass, what are we going to do? People will be lining up and asking the state for help. And that's going to be tough. Like we were talking about, you either cut services, which will happen, or raise taxes, or most likely it would be both. Who wants to see a statewide sales tax? Who wants to see special fees placed on anything from hunting, more fees on hunting and licensing fees, to special fees in the cities? Or funds such as the Prairie Dog Fund that's been a great benefit to many people across the state. Maybe the legislature has to backtrack on that and say, it's been good while it lasted, we can't afford to do that anymore. So if it does pass, we'll have our work cut out for us in the legislature. The Republicans have had 30 years of supermajority to take care of this and have done nothing about it yet.
Michael Coachman.
Well, what people need to realize is freedom is always attached to the land. You're not free if you don't own your property. If you go 2 to 3 years without paying property tax, they will come and take it, which I'm going to get back to in a little bit. But like I was stating when I opened up, that the Constitution has a lot of things already laid out. Here, Article 10 in the North Dakota Constitution, it says the legislative assembly shall not prohibit from raising revenue or to defray the expense of the state through the levying of a tax of assessed value of real or personal property. And it already states on how that is supposed to be taken care of with businesses. We have two individuals who work the legislature, and they're not even following the Constitution. That is one of the biggest issues we have. It spells out what needs to be done for an individual, which is key to freedom. What no one wants to address is what happens when people can't pay their property tax. They come and confiscate all those lands. You go to different counties for the last couple of years and see how many people who lost their homes because they could not afford their property tax. All because it was in generations, 2 to 3 years, it's gone. As far as covering the cost, here we have, which you've probably seen in the newspaper, all the expenditures that the state has done. First of all, as governor, I will cut all the services that really don't have a purpose. It doesn't meet the Constitution value. And then we start going through and doing audits. We know every place needs to be audited. And once you do an audit, you can find out where the money is. And the sad thing is, you're talking about where the money comes from. Am I done there? Oh, okay.
We're going to give everybody else a chance, one more bite at the apple, and we'll start again with Representative Armstrong.
But, well, yeah, I mean, it's the answer to this question is we have to figure out how to get, and we, a lot of this is good. I mean, we've had 120,000 people come into the state over the last 10 years. We've had growth. We have communities that were shrinking and dying in western North Dakota that are now growing and values are going up and all of those different things. So you have real opportunities for things and things that never existed when we were first here. When I graduated from high school in 1995, nobody stayed. There were no opportunities in western North Dakota. So those things are great, but they're not great for a senior citizen who has no interest in selling their home and they're seeing their valuation come up. So there are real ways in which we can address this issue, but it can't just be what we've done in the past, which is buy downs, buy downs, buy downs without any significant reform. And I think there's real opportunities to it. Legacy Fund has grown to the point where the interest can do this. Common Schools Trust Fund was never, I don't think anybody ever saw that having $8 billion in it. Now we got to utilize that and give directly relief to where the people are asking for it the most, and that is in the property tax realm.
Senator Pepcorn?
This basically amounts to a tax transfer. The money has to come from somewhere, and it is our obligation as a state. What does it really boil down to? Taking care of roads and providing public education. And also, you know, this lets a lot of the big businesses, out-of-state corporations off the hook. Railroads, a lot of that centrally assessed property, including railroads and transmission lines and some pipeline property. So that makes up not all of the property tax, but a big chunk of it. There are a couple of plans out there that are being talked about. I think there are probably a total of 40 property tax relief plans, property tax restructuring plans out there that people are having written up by legislative council now. A couple of that I'm interested in is boosting the, at least temporary relief, boosting the $500 residential property tax credit to $1,000 per primary residence and making it permanent. Another is, and this is pretty drastic, it's pretty radical, it would take some pretty heavy duty figuring and a lot of talking and negotiating, but having the state ante up the third of the cost of the education that we're not paying for right now. Right now, the state pays for approximately two-thirds of the cost of educating a student, K through 12 student, and how about we take a look at, start the conversation with paying for it all, reducing the pressure on school districts. School districts, the largest cause, the greatest cause for raising that property tax. If the state could step up and fund it, that would reduce the pressure on schools to keep putting out these bond issues that often don't pass.
All right, Michael Coachman, you have about a minute, too.
Okay. As I was saying, no one wants to let the people have their homes. You got people who are locked in income, have to make a choice of making a monthly payment, medicine, or food. We, as individuals, are supposed to be able to own our property, and no one wants the people to own their own property. That is the key to freedom. As far as the funding, like I said, we have this. We have things that we cut. We already heard back in October, we got billions of billions of dollars. But how is it helping the individual? And as far as meeting the come up with the cost. Here, at the turn of the century, we couldn't even fly, but now we can go almost Mach 5 with the SR-72. We have technology that we're a computer, we can put it in our pocket, but we can't come up with a plan to fix the budget here in North Dakota? Really? You guys had years to try to fix the budget and fix property tax. As me as governor, I will eliminate it and I will do some cutting and we will make the government downsize and we will get the funding.
Our next topic has to do with the Ethics Commission. North Dakota's Ethics Commission is looking at some changes on who and how ethics complaints should be filed. Do you believe our ethics rules should be changed to make things more transparent? Senator Pepcorn.
Thank you, Dave. You know, this Ethics Commission was established because of a bill sponsored by Fargo Democrat Senator Tim Mather. And it is in existence. It's very, very slow in getting formed up and forming these things that you're talking about, guidelines, duties, responsibilities, membership, types of complaints, how they're handled. And I will say that the legislature initially really dragged its feet. And, you know, just because something is presented, the legislature still can either help move it along or can drag its feet and just try to impede, in this case, impede the implementation of an ethics commission. And if you see some of the things happening in the legislature, you probably understand why there's a resistance to having an ethics commission at all. So we have to, we've got a good leader of the ethics commission right now, someone who's in charge of it. And I think that she will be effective in forming it up and establishing the guidelines and getting the processes in place. We're still kind of dragging our feet along those lines, but it needs to be there. The people want it, and I think we'll get there.
Michael Coltrane.
I think it's a waste as far as how the ethics committee is moving for a simple reason. Everybody's protecting everybody. They're not enforcing what is already being done. There's been unethical events within, as far as I know, I've been here in North Dakota, but they get pushed aside or because cronyism. Until you start and making everybody accountable, it's just a Band-Aid on an artery. You can't do nothing until we make a change in government where people are not afraid to stand up and say, hey, look, this is wrong. Because most of the power, as far as the ethic, really belongs to the people. They're the ones who say, hey, look, this person's doing wrong. You need to do something about it. But no one really wants to take care of the real problem. It's just a nice way of saying, we'll take care of it. You just go back to sleep.
Okay, and Representative Armstrong, a little bit further, the North Dakota Monitor recently did the story you're familiar with on your oil and gas assets. So, you know, in terms of ethics, do you believe that you can adequately regulate the industry and avoid conflict of interest?
It's been no secret that I've been in the oil and gas industry since I started in this crazy run in 2012. The single most important thing that has probably happened, our consequential and generational change in North Dakota, has been a bunch of companies figuring out how to crack the Bakken and the Three Forks. It's providing generational wealth and opportunities, not just for this generation, but the next generation of North Dakotans to come. I think having somebody who knows that industry, knows what it takes to do that, is a benefit, not a detriment. But at the same time, one of the things that frustrates me with a little of this is you demonize the industry. We don't say a banker can't vote on any banking regulation because he's there, or a farmer can't vote on any farming regulation, or a businessman, tech entrepreneur, and private equity guy can't vote on any of those things. When you have a specific conflict, you need to address it, you need to recuse yourself. But if you can't, but at the same time, if you have an asset in Southwest North Dakota and there's a vote on the oil industry in Northwest North Dakota, that is not a direct conflict. So you have to talk to people, you have to trust the people you're talking to, you have to make sure you disclose those things. And to your other overlying question, I think with regards to the Ethics Committee, there are 1,000 different ways to be more transparent, and we should do that. You shouldn't have to do an open records request to get things. It's the 21st century. A lot of this stuff can be put online. But one of the things that frustrated me at the article, because you don't get the whole quote, is I spend 80 to 90 hours a year doing my financial disclosure, hire a campaign lawyer and an accountant full time. You know, it's a great process if you have the resources and you have an office staff to do that. We don't have that with North Dakota legislatures. They're volunteer legislators. So there has to be a way in which you can have more transparency, more disclosure, but you're not causing a volunteer legislature who serves every 2 years for 81 days to have to fork over 10 to 25 grand a year to file an ethics disclosure. We need more transparency. It should be more readily available. But we also should recognize we have the greatest form of representative government, I think, in the country, because everybody gets to go home and do a day job other than the 81 days in which they serve in the state senate or the state house.
Thank you for your answers on that.
Can I do a follow-up on that, please?
No, we have to move on. We've got a lot of topics I want to get to. So, next topic is, do you believe the state should have a voucher program for school choice? I'm going to start with Michael Coachman.
I'm going to have to, I know what you're saying, but I'm going to have to address this issue what he just said. In 2017, he passed SB 2134, talking about giving mineral rights back to the individuals in here in North Dakota. When he talked to the legislators and said, hey, look, this is going to be beneficial to the to previous owners, some things he failed to mention. One, that the state owned that, and that when it went back, there was no previous owners. And two, he did not disclose that he had oil wells in that land. Correct me if I'm wrong, didn't you not?
Yeah, you're wrong.
Okay, well, I got maps and documentation showing.
I had zero mineral acres that were held in suspense by the state of North Dakota. He's talking about the Lake Bed Minerals Bill. Probably as long as I serve in politics, I will not be more proud of a piece of legislation I passed. Because the state of North Dakota redistricted the lake, and they sent letters to North Dakota farmers and ranchers who've been scratching a living out of that dirt for generations. And they said, hey, you don't own your minerals anymore. We do. And when these people came forward, they said, what are our options? They're like, none. We sent you a letter. We took them. So I worked very closely with the attorney general, the governor at the time. We didn't get the process we wanted, so we introduced the bill. The state took those minerals from North Dakota farmers and ranchers, and we gave them back. And I was really, really proud to do that.
Farmers were given back to not zero, because there is not. Anything after 3 years that the state owns, there is no previous owners.
They had been buying and selling leases on those minerals for generations.
There is no owners on that land. And we got documentation on it.
I have a question. Can we just move on now from this rather than get stuck in the weeds on this one particular issue?
Well, no, it's a reason. It's for the simple reason he's talking about being ethical.
Yeah, I understand.
But if he's going to not be ethical with this, he's not going to be as governor. That's key. People need honest people in the government.
Yeah. Okay. We need to let Merrill to weigh in if he wants.
I think that the people understand now Kelly's position in oil. His company, his family company, owns over 300 wells. Mm-hmm. He has significant income from that. And well, I just get my sources from the news that we trust. But at any rate, talk about recusing yourself from votes. There are only three members on the Industrial Commission. A lot of these conversations that take place, it's the governor, the agriculture commissioner, and the attorney general. And of course, they've all been Republican for the past several years, 30 years. Well, not quite 30 years, but close, you add it all up. And a lot of conversations take place that are not recorded in the minutes. For example, should I recuse myself? Those conversations don't have to be recorded in the minutes. And so what several issues do come up in the Industrial Commission regarding oil regulation and gas regulation and energy questions. And if Kelly's going to be recusing himself from every issue that comes up that deals with those, that leaves two members on the commission. And they pretty much march in lockstep anyway. Having a Democratic, nonpartisan league governor will immediately add transparency to the conversations that are going on with the Industrial Commission and provide some balance when it comes to voting on these issues as well.
I'd like to get back to vouchers if you're willing to talk about it.
Sure.
And we'll start going with Coachman.
Yes, I believe vouchers are good. I believe that parents should have the opportunity to send the child to whatever program they want, either public school, private school, home school. Yes. The power needs to be in the parents' hand. And right now, we're taking a lot of that power away from the voice from the parents. I think this will be a good thing.
Representative Armstrong?
I believe in more parental involvement. I believe in the concept of school choice. I think vouchers aren't necessarily the right approach. You can see this in other states, by the way, right? Before vouchers passed, like in Arizona, tuition in private schools raised. I think the key to this is to making sure. I have two kids in public school. I have two kids that have gone to two different public school systems over the last 5 years. I think we nationalize education arguments far too often. I want to localize them. I'm proud of the education my kids get in public schools, but I think responsible school choice, provided that it allows for the money to follow the parents, is a really good approach to do things, and I don't think it has to be either or. We can fund our public school system. We can have the best public school system in the country, and we can still allow for significant more parental autonomy in school choice.
Senator Pepcorn.
Well, I'll tell you, Dave, if we pass no property tax, we're going to have a hard time funding anybody's education. But in the meantime, this school choice, it's a lovely term that sounds fantastic. And what it's hiding, we have a tough enough time right now paying for our public education. We're getting it done. It's our state's responsibility. I'd like to see the state up our financial commitment to public education. And taking money away right now from public education for vouchers, any money you take and send in that direction is going to mean less money for the public education we have now. Our teachers are fantastic. They're strapped. They're buying things out of their own pocket to provide for their classrooms right now. And it's always been possible for the private schools to get children, students into their schools that they either wanted for athletics or who needed, according to their parents, this particular environment. Another thing is most of the private schools are not required to offer the same services to students perhaps with disabilities, for example. We cannot start chipping away at the funding for public education in favor of private education, and it's simple as that. I couldn't explain my stance any clearer than that.
Okay. Can I do a follow-up on that, please?
I'll give you one shot.
Okay. Again, the Constitution, North Dakota Constitution, says here in Article 8 of Education, the Legislative Assembly shall provide a uniform system of free public school throughout the state, beginning with primary and extended through all grades up to and including of higher education. Except the Legislative Assembly may authorize tuition fees and service charge to assist in the finance of public schools of higher education. You were arguing about something that the state constitution is already stating that they're supposed to fund 100%. Thank you.
And I happen to agree with that, I believe, in my statement.
And we're not doing it. That's why property tax has nothing to do with them funding this.
Okay, I need to get Kelly Armstrong in to hear his response.
I think when the more autonomy you can give parents and the more you can do these things, I think the better off you are. I do want to say, and I mean this sincerely, any kind of program that involves school choice, the money has to follow the kid, and the poorest Catholic kid in that community needs to have the opportunity to do those educations. I don't think any school choice program that is allowing to subsidize tuition for already existing students is the right approach. But the other answer is I just wholly reject the argument that it's either or. I just don't think it is. I mean, like I said, I think you can, as the more autonomy and the more choice you're giving parents in their, involved in their kids' education, the better our education all the way around is going to be.
30 seconds, sir.
30 seconds is all I'll give you.
I know that Mr. Armstrong chose his running mate, Lieutenant Governor Michelle Strinden, because she voted for private vouchers for schools in the last legislative session. And she also voted to end the North Dakota PERS benefits for teachers, one of the great attractants to teachers, to the profession here in North Dakota, a good retirement system, which is now taken away from guaranteed to, you know, go ahead and do with it what you want, put it in the stock market, see what happens. So I think people would benefit from knowing that.
All right. Our next topic then is child care. We hear a lot from parents who can't find child care. Many of the child care centers in the state are full and they have waiting lists. Should the state be doing more to support child care? Representative Armstrong.
Yes. I was just in Minto last night, Northwest Region, EDC. I've toured the child care facility in Leeds. I've seen what Watford City has done. I've seen all of those things. They started a program last year, and there's funding for child care. Found out last night that they turned around a background check in 5 days. That had been a hindrance for a significant period of time. When you're offering $15 to $18 to $20 an hour for a job and it takes 6 weeks to get a background check back, I can guarantee you in every other community in the state, in every community in the state, there are those same types of jobs that exist. But you also just can't build your way out of it. You can build 25 child care centers all the way across the state, but if you don't have the people to work there and the incentives to do that. One thing I learned last night that I didn't really know because I've been in D.C. for the last 6 years is with our grant programs and all of those different things, we kind of place that on the child care facility. Well, the people who are trying to run these child care facilities don't have time to write a grant, don't have time to figure those things out. So I think we need to, the idea was there and placed there in the last legislative session. I think we have to streamline it. I think we have to make it easier. I think we have to incentivize it, and we got to incentivize businesses and communities to do that. But I don't think we should put the blame on the person who's already probably trying to hire 3 extra spots, running around, trying to take care of toddlers and doing such a noble job. But we it's a workforce issue. It's a community growth issue. It's a parent issue. Anybody who knows a first-time mom, probably the scariest time of their life is the first day they drop their kid off at daycare and they want to come back and pick them up. But it's a hugely impactful issue that affects all other aspects of every community in the economy in North Dakota. And yes, we have to do a better job.
Senator Pepcorn.
Of course, a lot of the child care strain and financial responsibility and the woes that might come with that fall to single parents who are really in a bind. Two-parent households can often, you know, do some juggling. But the state should do several things. This is all leads back to workforce. A lot of the things we're talking about lead to workforce. And would it pay off? We need workers. We know it comes up all the time. So how about the state ramps up its support for the daycare providers themselves and perhaps to the parents as well to help them pay for that daycare? How about incentivizing businesses, large businesses, like starting in the Capitol building itself, to have a daycare in that building? Doesn't that sound good? How about at schools for teachers so they can have their children in that daycare right there at school? So let's talk about some of those things. Child care workers are horrendously underpaid. So let's step up and help them because it relates to the workforce, which means jobs. We need the workers to grow our economy. We're concerned about that. So just a couple of the things for us to start and talk about.
And Michael Coachman?
I'm going to be different from these two. I'm going to say no. And the only reason I'm saying no is you don't want the state involved in everything. This is a local thing. This is where people can come together and watch their own, help people, others, help them with their kids. Like I said, with businesses, that's a private entity. They should work out some type of child care program, not the state. It's not our responsibility as the state to interject our thoughts and our laws or guidance into every aspect of life. We're taking away the freedom of the people. That's what capitalism is, to work on different ideals to make a profit. We can come together as individuals and communities and work on different type of things as far as child care. It has to be left to the lower level. The state does not need to get involved. Again, we got millions of dollars going to teaching kids how to ride a bike, but you're gonna say, we need to spend more money into that. But again, it goes back to the property tax, but we don't have money for property tax. We have to stop the spending. We have to let people, if it dies on its feet, let it die. That's what our free internet, because what you're doing, saying is, we should be almost like a socialist country or a communist country to take care of everyone. No, it's a free enterprise. Let people work it out. We are smart enough to work out whatever issue we have within ourselves.
Okay. Next topic is a question that comes from our co-sponsor, AARP North Dakota. With the rising cost of vital prescription drugs that many North Dakotans rely on, what steps do you plan as governor to take to ensure that older people and their families have affordable access to these life-sustaining drugs? Senator Pepcorn.
There are a lot of issues around this particular bigger issue of the cost of medication for seniors and everybody else. I know recently the federal government has put caps on the 10 popular drugs. Some of them are diabetic and some weight loss. And one that I'm familiar with is a blood thinner that, fortunately, due to the miracle of modern medicine, I don't have to take those anymore. I'm appreciative of that. So capping the prices of these drugs. And there are several states that are also involved in their own separate programs involving capping the amount of people, the amount of money that people can spend on drugs. $2,000 is a popular figure. In our own legislature, just this last session, I believe it was Representative Gretchen Dobrovich, Dem NPLer from Fargo, sponsored the bill that capped the price of insulin. I forget the exact amount that people are still paying. But for an example, I go, well, why insulin? I didn't know that much about it. Because it's been around for years, and it's not that expensive to produce, and they're charging, making a lot of money at it, and which unfortunately keeps people away from the drug who need to use it. They're cutting their doses in half. There's a lot that the state can do. Pharmacy benefits managers have a lot to do with the price of prescription drugs too. Let's take a look at them, and perhaps we can rein them in as well.
Okay, Michael Goldschmidt.
Well, as you know, in Europe, and he already mentioned that to make produce certain meds is really cheap, but we are making up the difference. We need to be transparent as far as what is the cost to make that medicine, and as a state, you need to stop gouging, because that's what it is. It's price gouging, and we need to step in and say, look, you cannot be up in this 200, 300, 400% to the people here in North Dakota. You want to work here? We need to work on a deal on how to lower the prices. But we need somebody to step in. Because right now, again, the choices of meds, do I stay in my house or eat? We need to step in and say, hey, look, you need to change your method, your methodology on what you're charging the people here in this state. And as governor, I will step in and fight for you.
Representative Armstrong.
The overall health care part of this portfolio is, you got to remember, a significant portion of this is federal. I've watched it happen play out over the last 6 years in dealing with those issues. And the cost of health care in general is continuing to rise. So you got to work with there's different creative ways you can do this. We're a community of small businesses, and then you have your private insurance, and then when you go on Medicare and Medicaid, all of those different issues. And I think you want to look at what the shift is when that happens, and make sure that you're not pricing people out of that at that point. Then work about if you can figure out creative ways into force pool insurance plans, do different things where you can have a larger risk pool and deal with a lot of those issues. And then continue to talk with your representative, Senator Cramer, Senator Hovind, dealing with all of those type of issues. Medicare Part B is a huge problem. There's a fight on the coast about waste, fraud, and abuse to that program. It doesn't occur here, but without that program, we're going to have a huge, huge problem in North Dakota. So making sure we stay omnipresent on that and dealing with that. But at the state level, we got to continue to work with whether it's Stanford, whether it's Blue Cross, whether it's those programs, to ensure that we know why their rates are going. And a lot of that is federal policy and working careful and making sure that we can do everything we can at the state level, which sometimes can be a lot. A lot of times it's not going to be as much as we'd love it to be, to offset that federal regulatory regime.
All right. Let's move on now to the recent ruling by a North Dakota judge that threw out North Dakota's abortion ban. Many doctors say a woman doesn't even know she's pregnant at 6 weeks, for example. I know you probably all share different views on this, and voters want to hear them. So tell me your reactions to the ruling and where this controversial issue goes now from here within the state. Michael Coachman first.
Okay, I'll tell you right now, my feeling is life is begin at the moment of conception. Okay? That is what life is, right there. I know my opponents will say, hey, look, and just in case of a rape or incest, it's okay. No, I do not. We were in Grand Forks just a couple weeks ago for the Right to Life, and our guest speaker was a person who his mom was raped in a mental institution, and he was a very well-gifted speaker. What people don't realize is you could call it women's health care. It's murder. Because if you look at somebody who kills a woman who's pregnant, even if she's a couple weeks to a few months, what is that person charged with? Double homicide. Double homicide. Because it's a life. Life begins there at the moment of conception. Me, I'm going to support. I know that what the judge is saying, but I'm going to do everything I can to protect life. Not just on that end, but on the other end, the elderly. I will do everything to protect everything, because the most precious resource we have as a state is not oil, it's not ag, it's people. And I want to protect that precious resource.
Kelly Armstrong.
So I appeared in front of Judge Romanek. I've known, I mean, all of those different issues. I think he got it really wrong. I don't think that's the last saying in that. I think the North Dakota Supreme Court will have an opportunity to weigh in. I was chair of the Senate Judiciary when a lot of these bills came through, and I supported them then through committee and on the floor and passed them. And so I hopefully we get it right. I do think there are places in which we have to make sure that we create situations where, like, the exception actually works in an emergency room and not just in a hearing room. I think there are real answers to that, but I've been proud of my pro-life record through the entirety of my legislative career, and I'm going to continue to stand with the North Dakota law as it is. And if we got to clean it up, if we got to tighten it up, we have really smart people that can do that. But I'm hopeful the law will withstand, will be overturned at the Supreme Court.
And Senator Pepcorn.
You know what the smartest thing to do would be when we're talking about abortion and a woman's right to choose what she's going to do is to stay out of it. You're in the Senate, I'm in the Senate, Mr. Coachman has his ideas. We're going to sit in the legislature, we're going to talk to scientists and experts and legal experts and saying, well, it's 6 weeks until it's viable. It's not viable, the baby isn't viable out of the womb until 24 weeks. We shouldn't be involved in any of that talk. If you think it's murder, Mr. Coachman,
yes.
Then it's let that woman and family members, spouse, whoever it might be, partner, let them deal with their maker then, if that's what it is. We are all born sinners. And there are, you know, it's either, well, they're all equal, they aren't. I know I understand the significance of murder. I don't describe it as that. However, let that person deal with their maker is the way I feel about it, and not let me be the judge. I don't want to be in there talking with that doctor and that woman when they're talking about the various things, that just unimaginable things that can be going on. I'm not pro-abortion. I don't know anybody who is pro-abortion out promoting it. Hey, come on in. Let's do this. Get pregnant and get an abortion. I don't know people like that. We all cherish life, but we talk, you know, Representative Armstrong loves using the term overreach, federal overreach when it comes to energy and ag. How about this for overreach when the government gets into that health care decision that women have an extremely difficult time making difficult conversations?
Well, thank you for your answers on that. A topic I really wanted to get to is next. Do you believe that more of the legacy fund should be invested in North Dakota projects? And if it is, can you keep it as a state's funding source to be used when our oil and gas production dries up? Representative Armstrong.
Yeah, I think so. I think the key to the legacy fund is making sure you're investing in something that is not competing with existing North Dakota business. I like the idea of keeping as much of the principal and earnings to get back to replace that finite resource whenever it's done. But I also think that if you don't show citizens of the state how that is working for them, then there's going to be real issues and real things going forward. And I think the first way you do that is transparency. And make sure you understand and people understand where those monies are being disclosed and where those monies are being spent. But you have to be very careful with you do that. One, you better have worthy projects. You can't overheat the economy. I mean, if you invest $1 billion in legacy fund money into infrastructure in a community, it's going to be pretty expensive to do your driveway. My wife is from Oslo, Norway, and they have the world's largest sovereign wealth fund, and they're very, very transparent with it. You can go on website any single day and see exactly where their investments are, which is something I think North Dakota should absolutely strive for. And they're also very, very careful about artificially overheating their own economy with government infusion of dollars. That doesn't mean you can't do, like, large-scale water projects, things, fiber, as we start talking about this, connectivity, things that every single North Dakota benefits from. But one, be transparent. Two, make sure people know where it's being spent and invested. And three, make sure North Dakotans are proud of how that is happening. And I think that's a recipe for short-term success and long-term success.
Senator Pepcorn?
Repeat the question for me, would you please?
About, do you believe more of the legacy fund should be invested in North Dakota projects?
Well, again, what a vetting process. Who's going to decide? This is where we do need transparency. What we don't need is people with special access to government, whether it be bending the ear of the governor, whether it be bending the ear of officials at the Bank of North Dakota. Right now, there are discussions on changing the way our money is managed and how it is invested, and there will be some pretty extensive conversations about that, and people will know more about it as they continue. But what we don't want is people coming in and looking for a quick buck. Wherever there's money available to invest in a project, there are people swarming around, kind of in the outskirts often, looking for a way how they can get their hands on it and without really doing anything, without accomplishing anything. So oversight, we have to trust our government leaders and our officials when it comes to making some of these spending decisions. But again, we go back to transparency, how the decisions are being made, and whether or not it competes with Fargo businesses, Fargo, North Dakota businesses, that's another question. But we certainly can grow. There are going to be opportunities here in North Dakota that we haven't even realized yet. I was just up in Grand Forks at the National Security Corridor, where they're going to be launching satellites, building satellites, and launching satellites from the Grand Forks Air Force Base. That's new in North Dakota, and something that there are things that we haven't even imagined yet that I believe that we will be able to invest here in North Dakota.
So, Michael Coachman, go ahead.
Well, we might beg the difference as far as the oil reserve drying up. I do believe it's replenishable. But as far as investing into North Dakota, we need to invest more into the small towns. We need to bring life to these small towns of 50, 75, 100, because right now they're being forced out because of property tax or one mean another. We need to bring these towns into life, bring them up to the modern times, so we can start bringing infrastructures or companies into our state to make these small towns viable. We just got to just do more as far as investing in our state as a government. But it's like maybe like a one-time good deal, and then take on.
All right, now I'd like to ask each of you how you're going to vote on measure number 5, the legalization of recreational marijuana. Why or why not? And we'll start with Senator Pepcorn.
Well, I'm conflicted on this, but I did not sign the petition to get it on the ballot, and I will be voting no. I'm kind of thrown in with the Highway Patrol on this, one of the branches of law enforcement that I respect most. Is it tough maybe pulling over somebody with a headlight out and they're smoking a joint and they spend prison time? Well, then let's take a look at the penalties for possession and using and differentiate that from selling, from dealing and transporting large quantities. We can't penalize the occasional recreational user like that and make them criminals out of that. But I'm just, as governor, that the legislature can do amazing things to impede the implementation of an initiated measure. That's another something that's on the ballot. Maybe you'll get to it later. But as governor, if it passed by the people, I would simply go ahead and endorse it and say, well, let's go for it and implement it in the most effective and safe way.
Now, Michael Coachman.
Again, me too. I'm kind of conflicted on it. Maybe I'm not going to say a no or a yes on it, but it's up to the people. That is up to the people on what they want to do. If the people say yes, we want it, I support it. If they say no, there it is. But it's up to the people on that.
Representative Armstrong.
I have flip-flopped in my own mind on this issue so many different times. First of all, I want to give a lot of credit to the people who brought the measure forward. This is significantly better written than some of the previous measures. If we remember the medical marijuana one, they decriminalized the purchase. They just forgot to decriminalize the sale. It gives local municipalities and local governments significantly more autonomy. Spent 10 years as a criminal defense attorney, watched all of these things. I actually have to give a lot of credit to the North Dakota legislature, mostly after I left, about taking a more responsible approach. You don't go to prison for smoking a joint in North Dakota anymore. They have decriminalized a lot of these things. And so I think the measure is written in a great way. But, you know, I spent the last 6 years spending about half my time in D.C., where it's omnipresent. You walk outside and you smell it everywhere. It's in front of the 7-Elevens. It's all over the place. And I have a 16-year-old, 14-year-old, so I'm just going to tell you, when I walk in at the ballot, I'm going to vote no.
Oh, we have time for one more question, and this is AARP. And I need to limit the answers to 1 minute because we're starting to run out of time. This has to do with senior housing. Are there things the state could or should do to help keep people in their homes longer before having to be going to a nursing home or facility like that? I'd like to start with Michael Coachman.
Can you repeat the question again,
please? It is about housing for seniors. Is the state able to do something to keep seniors in their home as much as possible before they have to move to an institution?
Well, get rid of property tax. Not right there. That way they don't have to move to a senior living. That's what they're doing, is raising it where they can't, where they have to move them to assisted health. Let them stay in their house. If they were there for generations, let them stay in their own house. In property tax, let them stay in their house.
Representative Armstrong.
It is to deliver long-term care and effectively do all of those things. It is significantly cheaper for the patient, it's cheaper for the taxpayer, and it's cheaper for the community the longer people can stay in their own home. Now, there are going to be some things if you have to do some modifications for wheelchair access. Some of that's easier in some places than others. I think you run the stagger, you deal that. One of the things on property taxes is significantly expand the homestead tax credit for 65 and older. I think the conversation is different in a community with access to care versus a community farther away from care. We've had a lot of conversations with AARP and the people who work there, and I think there are things we can do to make a lot of those things better.
Senator Pepcorn.
Lots of things we could do positively for senior housing, including freezing or eliminating property tax for seniors at a certain age, maybe having certain residence requirements. And again, this is where we sit down and talk. I think we're all headed in the same direction. Let's get the involved parties and move in that direction. How about maybe incentivizing developers and the construction industry? You know, in the big major plants, like the soybean crushing facilities, for example, one incentive there is to no sales tax on some of the equipment they buy. How about that? Let's try that for developers and builders of small homes. And also, in-home care is extremely important. Let's be able to pay in-home care people. It's quite a sacrifice family members are making, and that would really reduce the strain on seniors and our senior living facilities that are lacking.
All right, we have reached our time for closing comments and statements, and Senator Pepcorn goes first. 1 minute.
Let's make it simple. I stand with taxpayers in reducing property tax, or at least holding the line on property tax, not eliminating the property tax. I stand with our seniors for those reasons I just mentioned now. Prescription drugs, capping the price, try to keep it within reach of seniors, and providing more affordable housing. I stand with our farmers and ranchers and look for more opportunities for, yeah, the corporate people are moving in for some of the opportunities, but I'm concerned about the beginning and small farmers and ranchers as well. What can we do to help them? I stand with women and the right to make their own decisions regarding health care, and I'm not afraid to use the term abortion. Let's stay out of it, and women, you make those decisions. And I stand with small businesses. Let's help recruit workers to keep the economy going here in North Dakota. Lots of things we talked about today relate exactly to that. Thank you.
Thank you. Michael Coachman, 1 minute.
All right, thank you. I can honestly say, as governor, that I will back and support the people. The people, like I had mentioned before, are the most vital resource of this state. And with that, and I meant opening too, that the Constitution lays out everything. I will be a governor that will follow the Constitution. I will tell the legislator, hey, if you're not following the Constitution, I'm not signing off. For instance, Article 3, power reserved to the people. The people reserve the power to pose and enact laws by initiative, not the senators, not legislators. And right now we have Measure 1, Measure 2, and Measure 3 taking away the power of the people. I want the power to go back to the people. And I could tell you this right now, I'm not under duress and I'm not compromised.
Kelly Armstrong.
Everybody has the great privilege of that gets to run for this position, does it at a unique time in history. And because of people like Ed Schaefer, John Hoeven, Jack Dalrymple, Doug Burgum, and a bunch of people who risked their capital, risked a lot of things, we have created an opportunity in North Dakota where we're first governor candidate in my lifetime that doesn't have to run on jobs, 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 jobs. Right now we have to run on workforce and housing and all of those different things. And because of good policy and good things promoted by those people, the legislature, and more importantly, the people who took the risk to figure out how to grow crops in eastern North Dakota, develop oil, gas, coal in western North Dakota. We have an opportunity now to grow this state in the 21st century, and we are at such a huge advantage compared to other places all across the state. So it's really, really my privilege to run for governor, and it's a lot of fun to tackle these challenges and move forward and figure out how we do make sure that every single kid who graduates from high school in North Dakota has the opportunity to build a life, build a family, and build a career here.
I'd like to thank our candidates for a spirited debate tonight. Republican Congressman Kelly Armstrong, Democratic State Senator Merrill Pepcorn, and Independent candidate Michael Coachman, and for your participation in this debate. Remember, Election Day is November 5th. Early voting is underway already. Thank you for watching Prairie Public and AARP North Dakota's coverage of Election 2024. I'm Dave Thompson. Good night.
Funding for Election 2024 coverage is provided in part by AARP, a nonprofit, nonpartisan membership association, 83,000 strong in North Dakota. Find information on how to make your voice heard in the 2024 election at aarp.org/ndvotes.
That's a wrap for this Wednesday edition of Main Street. Tomorrow, we'll re-air the debate on Measure 4, a voter initiative aimed at eliminating property taxes in North Dakota. Former legislator Dr. Rick Becker argued in favor of the measure, while Aaron Burst from the North Dakota Association of Counties argued against it. Until then, I'm Craig Blumenschein. Thanks for listening.